I like the one, even a fool is considered wise when he keeps his mouth shut. You know, that's usually you have to tell sophomores that once in a while. There's just a lot of them. And hopefully as you think about it and we go through this, you'll relate to it, understand it. And most people have learned a lot from Proverbs. Some people have a system of reading it. There's 30 chapters. That's one a day for each month. And so I have found that if you try to do all Proverbs 1 in one day, you got, you know, quite a few Proverbs there. So probably something from Proverbs 1, something from Proverbs 2, whatever. And then next month I do another section of it, whatever. It's pretty tough to read it all and get it all because there's something about it that it's repetitive, repetitive, repetitive. Once I tried to preach through it, verse by verse, you know, verses 1 through 6 of chapter 1 and verse 7 through whatever, you know. And the first message was great. The second message wasn't too bad. The third message was the same as the second message, only different, you know. And the fourth message was just like the second message, only different. You know, it's just, there's this repetitiveness about, you know, wise men and foolish men and riches and adultery and all these subjects just keep coming up again and again and again. In fact, some of the Proverbs early on are repeated word for word later on. So if you can go verse by verse, you really get like, I think I just said this last week, you know, only in a different way. So we have to think that through. But we're going to go through our sheets here and try to fill in some blanks. The book of Proverbs gives us skill in what? Raising sons. That's probably not completely accurate, but a lot of it is, my son, listen, my son, listen. Really, it's designed to teach the fool, the naive fool, the young fool, if you would. You might be 40 and still be a naive fool, but most of the time, naive fools are younger people. And the purpose, therefore, would be, if I can teach you when you're young how to live, guess what? What did you? What can you avoid? You can either learn from your teacher or you can learn from what? Your mistakes. Which do you want? You can either, you know, listen to somebody who's wise and avoid all the mistakes, or you can try it yourself and learn it yourself and usually bump into all kinds of problems. So it's an attempt. You realize that as you read through it, he's just pleading with naive fools, the young fools, the ones who don't know anything. He's pleading with, listen to me, I've been through this. And so as you go through, you have to put that in mind. What is a proverb? The Hebrew word is masal, and that means a comparison. It's a derivative of the word that means a mirror. So you say, what's that all about? So you have a mirror here, and if I'm looking into the mirror, guess what? You see two of me, or I see myself, and my and there's the real me in the mirror of it. There's a comparison going on. And so here it is, to present a truth by that which reflects it. That's the concept here. So sometimes in the Proverbs, they are metaphors where or similes where they use the word like or as, but most of the time it's just comparisons going on. And so I can understand this when I look in the mirror or the comparison, and either as a contrast or as a complement to whatever I just said, and I can help myself to understand it is. So it's to present a truth by that which reflects it. Eventually, that word meant any sage or wise pronouncement. Any sage or wise pronouncement. So it started out mirror to comparison to that, the presenting of truth by that which reflects it to any wise statements, any sage short statement. It is a short, and it's a concise. Sometimes they use the word pithy. You don't use that much, P-I-T-H-Y? A pithy statement. I always like words that I never use, but a pithy statement, a short, concise statement, a terse statement, which incisively contrasts or sets forth truth. For example, here are some other proverbs that aren't in the Bible. A stitch in time saves nine. All right? And why? Where? When would you use that? Not just with clothing, right? You got a little rip in your clothes. You know, stitch in time will save nine. You'd use that in a lot of situations of life. You know, you can fix your car now when there's just this little problem in it, or you can wait until there's a big problem, and then it's going to take a lot of work to fix it. All right? You got a little leak in your roof. You can stitch in time saves nine. You can fix the little leak, or you wait till it rots out the whole roof, and you can replace the whole roof. You got a choice. All right? So we have little statements, a stitch in time saves nine, pithy statement, a short, concise statement, that incisively either contrasts or sets forth a truth. Another one, early bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. All right? And you got to believe that or not believe it. Idleness is the devil's workshop. I mean, you could just think of a whole bunch of pithy statements. Often two sides of a truth are set in clear opposition, so the reader therefore has to make a or see his choice. You got to be this or this. And here's what happened if you do this. For example, Proverbs 11, verse 1. says, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. So, you got two options there. You can have a false balance, or you can have a just weight. And if you have a false balance, guess what? God's not happy. If you have a just weight, it's His delight. He loves that when you're fair, when you're equitable. So it's more than just, of course, in their culture, everything was weighed out, and you went to the market, and you weighed everything out, and that's what, you know, you could put your little finger on there and chip somebody, or have a little bit extra weight, or they used to scrape off weight or put extra weight on their weights, one or the other, to their advantage. Says, now that's an abomination, Lord. You got to be just. You got to be right on. You want to be that. How about Proverbs 11:14, where there is no counsel, the people fail. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Was that what you said? Success and safety, really. All right. So you can say, okay, by that little statement, here's what it says. I can just run off in life, all on my own, think I know everything. I'm going to buy my own car without talking to anybody. I'm going to buy my own house without talking to anybody. I'm going to get a job, you know, whatever it is. I'm going to do everything without talking to anybody. Or I can just ask a lot of people, what kind of car would you buy? Have you ever tried a Ford? What do you think of Fords or whatever? You can just ask a lot of people. Now, one of the things we don't do in this study here is the paradoxes of Proverbs. Proverbs is one of the five anti-legomena. In other words, the word anti-legomena means to speak against. And the Jews were allowed to speak against only five books of the Bible. And one of them is Proverbs. That is to say, that does not say they didn't agree with it or think it was inspired. That's not the issue, but they could speak critically of it. The rest of Scripture, you couldn't speak critically of it at all. But they could about the Proverbs because sometimes there are paradoxes in it. For example, in Proverbs 26, verse 4, it says, do not answer a fool according to his folly. And this verse 5 says, answer a fool according to his folly. So which do you want me to do? You know? And so they said there's a legitimacy to saying sometimes it doesn't make sense. The truth is, by the way, when you look at those two verses, it says this, do not answer a fool according to his folly, for he'll only hate you. Answer a fool according to his folly, that you might give him wisdom. So they're not the same, are they? It is saying sometimes you're looking at a fool in his folly, and here's what you ought to realize. You might as well not talk to him. Don't answer a fool according to his folly. He's only going to hate you anyway. You know, just don't even go there. What good is it going to do? He's not going to listen to you. When it's all done, he's going to hate you. However, on the other side, answer a fool according to his folly if you can give him some wisdom. And sometimes you have to make that call. Here's a guy really doing something stupid. Do I talk to him? Or do I not talk to him? And you guys say, if I talk to him, he's going to hate me or he might gain some wisdom. I'll give it a shot. I'm going to try that. So there are paradoxes. One of them is this, where there is no counsel, the people fail, but in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. That might make you think you ought to listen to everybody and what they say to you. One of the paradoxes of Proverbs, and they're really not paradoxes you can't understand, is this. In the multitude of counselors, safety. In other words, before you make any decisions, you ought to listen to people. You ought to ask questions. However, it also will say in the Proverbs this, don't listen to everybody. You know, you're a fool if you make a decision without asking questions of anybody, and you're a fool if you listen to everybody. You understand that? So you got all this counsel, and then you got to weigh through it and try to find out, you know, everybody says this except this one guy, so he's probably wrong. You know, nine guys said this and one guy said this, so probably I'll go with the nine. You got to weigh through it. So don't try to make decisions without counsel, but don't be a fool and listen to everything. First time somebody says, hey, you ought to buy a whatever, don't do that either. So those are the paradoxes. But you have that opposition. Proverbs 13, verse 1. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Good shot. Good shot, but Phyllis sat down. Rebuke. All right? So, you know, you want to be a wise son and listen, or you want to be a fool and when your dad rebukes you, you know, whatever. So you see the two sides of a truth set in clear opposition. You got to make a choice. It's your shot, your call. Why this style? Or why use this style? Well, it was very popular in that day. Do you think it's popular today? Not really? You have people at work or in your neighborhood or in your home and they're always rattling off Proverbs. Stitching time saves nine. Multitude counselors wisdom. Does it fit a video game? If not, we're out of luck, right? Okay. It was very popular in that time. They loved it. And you understand that in the Middle East in particular, most of its history, they respected wise people. By wise people, they were the people who just had these little wise statements. And so that's why Solomon, we'll find out, had 3,000 of them that he collected or wrote himself. And if you go and you ever live with those people or are with those people, I remember even just the short trip we took through Jordan, the guide was always giving out Proverbs. All day. It was just like they'd rattle off. And he would say the same one every morning. Us Americans say, hey, you can't do the same thing twice. You got to be original the next morning. But he'd say it 3-4 times a day. And it was just a part of him, and they considered that wisdom because he had those little proverbs. So here are some reasons that you would use this style, why it was popular in that. First of all, it was easily remembered. Who could read in that day? How many had books? Not too many, all right? So a stitch in time saves 9. After a while you can remember that one. And so you had a very easily remembered concept, and I got the concept. Number two, it's easily repeated. So you can say, stitch in time saves 9. How many times have I said it tonight? You're still not throwing apples at me or anything, Eventually you will, but you can repeat it. It's not boring. It's not distasteful. It's easily comprehended, all right? Easily grasped, contemplated upon. You can think about it. You walk through the day. Stitch in time saves 9. I wonder what Dad meant when he said that, And I said, Dad, should I change the oil in my car? Well, stitch in time saves 9. I wonder what he meant by that. So you think about it. You can contemplate. You can comprehend it. Okay? And it's easily applied. It's clear and concise expression of truth. And so it helps you to do that in a very well. So I asked you to quote some proverbs you've incorporated in your life. Remember I told you about my dad, and a little bit later we're going to look at some of my dad's proverbs, when it comes to money. What good is it? Pigs won't even eat it. Little statements like that. He must have said that to me 1,000 times, But I got it finally. What good is money? Pigs won't even eat it. I finally got it. If you want to have a friend, you got to be friendly. That's what the proverb says, right? So your kid comes home, oh, Dad, no one likes me, whatever. Well, if you want to have a friend, you got to be friendly. Quit whining on my shoulder, whatever it is. So you have proverbs, and you could think of them. What are the dangers? Well, proverbs are short and concise, and therefore they are generalizations, not full discussions. So sometimes when people study the Proverbs, they make it sound like this is God's last and full statement on this truth. And it's like, in the multitude of counsel, there's wisdom. And it's like, now that tells us everything we ever have to know about counsel. No, it doesn't. It's just a short generalization. They often do not give exceptions to the rule, which may truly exist. So let's just look at one. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So what does that mean? That's God's last statement on training kids. Right? It's all you ever need to know. Right?
So what about all the years in between?
There you go. So we got this statement. What do I do with it? Here's some options. Is it a promise? If I train up my child in the way he should go, then I have God's promise that when he's old, he won't depart from it. I can go to the bank. I did my training. I sent him to Sunday school. I had memorized 14 verses, blah, blah, blah. I know he's 16 now. He's a terrible wreck and, doing terrible things. But when he's old, he's going to come back. It's God's word said it. It's a promise. Is it a promise? No, it's a proverb. It doesn't promise you that just because you sent your kid to Sunday school and made him learn 14 verses a day or whatever, that somehow he's going to turn out well when he's 21. It's not a promise. Some people say it's a precept. As I say, it's a law. I have to train up my child in the way he should go. That's my job. Well, you better do that. That's for sure. But it's not a precept. What it is a proverb. It's a generalization. It's a general truth. And so, you say, well, how do you explain, there's this family in church, and they just trained 14 kids all the same way, and one of them turned out bad, How do you explain that one who turned out bad? Well, I don't have to explain the one who turned out bad, They trained all 14 kids the same way, and then one turns out bad. It doesn't seem like Proverbs 22:6 is right. Well, then you're making it a promise or a precept. It's a proverb. It's just a general statement. Here's the way it fits. The way you train your kid, the key there is the word train, right? It doesn't say, if you talk to your kids right, It doesn't say if you teach him right. It says you train him. Train up a child in the way he should go. And then when he's old, that's what he'll do. Let me give you an example. In Lynette's home, they were trained. You take off your shoes when you walk in the house. And it became a... To be trained, that means this is how you act. You know, you don't need to be told every time you come in the house. It's inbred right into you. It's trained into you. Obviously, they taught it and whatever. But eventually, it became a way of life. So guess what happened when she got married and we had our house? Exactly right. And she couldn't figure out why I didn't. In my house, we weren't trained to take off our shoes. We wore shoes. And you can go to people's houses, and I always ask now, do you take off your shoes here or not, right? Because some houses, that's the way they're trained. In other houses, they don't, all right? You know how I was trained? This is a crazy one. We were Dutch, so we were very frugal. I'll say it that way. Some people call us cheap. But anyway, we were frugal, all right? And we didn't have a lot of money in my home. So we had, in high school, you can't bring a lunchbox. You know, it's a little too old to bring a, you know, Mickey Mouse lunchbox. So we had paper bags, but we always had to save them. That bag had to last you all week. And if you lost it, you didn't get lunch for the rest of the week. That's the way we were. I was trained to save my, you know, I'd fold it up, put it in my pocket, bring it home, give it to Mom. That meant I had lunch tomorrow, all right? I was trained to save lunch bags. You know what I still do? It is really hard for me to use a lunch bag once and throw it away. It's just really hard for me. It's like, that's not right, you know? So it's a general truth. What it teaches you is this. It's vital how you train your kids. What you instill in them as a way of life and way of thinking. From, you know, taking off shoes or not, some of those are like, you know, it doesn't really matter. God's Word doesn't give anything about it. But to other things as well. The way you train them. How they treat people. You've trained them and how they respect or disrespect authority, how they respond to teachers or don't, or whatever. All those things, the way you train them, train up a child in the way he should go, then when he's old, he'll continue in that. It's not a guarantee that every kid that goes to Sunday school is going to be perfect. Doesn't guarantee anything like that. Just says, think about it. Train them well. Train them well. See, it really motivates me and you to train up my kids right. Because I want them to have that habit built into their life. They don't throw away their lunch bag. You know, that's what I don't want them to do. So it's a general proverb. So the danger is to make it a full discussion, you know, with promises and precepts and whatever. It is not that at all. There are exceptions, probably. There are parts of it that you have to think through. So let's look at the sections. As you read through it, for example, chapter 1, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon. You go to chapter 10, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon. Chapter 22, verse 17, the words of the wise men. Proverbs 25, the Proverbs of Solomon collected by Hezekiah. Chapter 30, verse 1, the words of the Proverbs of Agar. And then 31, the words or Proverbs of Lemuel. So the first 9 verses, it's Solomon. They're the Proverbs of Solomon. And the key there will be, all the way, my son, verse 8, for example, chapter 1, verse 10 of chapter 1, and on it goes, my son, verse chapter 2, verse 1, my son. So it's like a father warning or exhorting his son. So it's Solomon's exhortations to his son. And all the way through it, he's just saying, oh, don't do this, do this, you know, hear the instruction of your father. He's just pleading with his son. You will find he will talk to his son in the rest of the Proverbs too, but here it's really his exhortations to his son. Chapter 10 through 22, the longest section, is just his collection. And there's a noticeable change. First 9 chapters usually tend to be longer sections about certain truths, about the adulterous woman or the, you know, what kind of friends. Don't go with the friends who say, hey, let's go kill somebody and steal, you know, that kind of a thing. And there'll be 3, 4, 5, maybe 8 verses on something, maybe even longer. And then when you get to chapter 10 through chapter 22, it's shorter statements like train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, will not depart from it. Verse 17 just goes to a totally different subject. It's like, where'd we go there? I lost you somehow. Chapter 22, verse 17 through 24, they're the words of the wise men. There are 2 groups of wise men, just a short section, but apparently they are not the Proverbs of Solomon, although he collected them. He got them from wise men, and he gives them the credits. In chapter 25, apparently these are the Hezekiah's gleanings of the Proverbs of Solomon. All right. We know from 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29, that Solomon wrote 3,000 proverbs and 1,005 poems. That's what it says. Now, there aren't 3,000 proverbs in your book of Proverbs. So there are a lot of proverbs he wrote, apparently, and you know people listen to them. So in chapter 25 through 29, apparently, we have Proverbs of Solomon compiled or collected by Hezekiah. And then chapter 30 is Agar, where he's focused on the creation and the creator. Chapter 31 is Lemuel, a collection about mothers and wives, women. That's the classic one about the godly woman and some other things that he talks about there. So you will find it's not all for Solomon, it's primarily Solomon. It's not all his collection. Some of it he collected from wise men. Some of it he didn't write down, apparently, but other people like Hezekiah did. So the purpose, next page. Teaching the teachable how they can have a well-managed life. That's a pretty important statement. It's teaching the teachable how to have a well-managed life or a skillful living. And so it's not, a lot of people will not benefit from Proverbs. They're not teachable. But if you want to listen to these and you want to just let them soak into you and you can comprehend them, they will have great impact on your life. Chapter 1, verse 2, if you turn in your Bibles there, we understand its purpose. These first seven verses are so crucial. They are proverbs, that's what it says, masals. They are these short, concise statements of wisdom, usually in a comparative form, from Solomon, the son of David. So there's no question about who this one is, who was also king of Israel. There's no doubt about who wrote these or collected these proverbs. And then it states this in verse 2. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding. Verse 3. To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. To give prudence to the simple, and to the wise man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wisdom, wise counsel. So that is the part about teachable. You know, the right people are going to listen to this and go, wow, that clicks with me, and that's right. Verse 6, to understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. So here's some things I think you can write down there for its purpose. It's to develop mental clarity and perception. There's knowledge and understanding and all those words. And there's something mental that's going to go on. It's not just an emotional expression. There's a mental part of it. But there's also instruction for justice and judgment and equity and prudence, discretion and all that. So it's to impart moral discernment and discretion. So again, just like in Psalms, there's more to living than just boom, here's the right thing to do. Here we find out there's a mental aspect of it, there's a truth part of it, but there's also a moral part of it. And you can't separate them. Remember that. It's going to be really important to realize that you can't be wise and evil. Okay? You can't be that. Now, it might seem like that to our life because we know some really evil people who make a lot of money, or very evil people who make good politicians or whatever. But ultimately, to have a well-managed life, the wisdom as the Bible would teach you, to live your life with wisdom in a biblical sense, you not only have to have a mental capability and skill, you have to have a moral aspect. So when you're evil, you will not be wise in the biblical sense of that term. Okay? Verse 2 through 7, I think, gives us perhaps the three aspects of it. Instruction means to know truth. You can't get what you don't know. You know, you can't teach what you don't know. You got to know something. So you got to know the proverb, train up a child in the way he should go. You got to know that. Okay? Then to understand or understanding. What's the next level? To grasp it, to get it, to understand it, to, for example, 2 + 2 = 4. Did I do this here last week? Did I do that? You know, I can know that, but I don't get it, you know. But then I can know it and I can get it. What's the last one? It's to use the truth. So those are important, to use it with skill, to use it for advantage. Here's a one other question. Is Christ in the Proverbs? Should insert the word in there. Is Christ in the Proverbs? You have to think that through as you go through the Scripture. Some people see, you know, that Christ has to be everything and everywhere and whatever. And other people are a little less prone to seeing Christ in every little thing that's there. All I would say is, in chapter 8, Proverbs chapter 8, does not wisdom cry out and understanding lift up her voice? She takes her stand on the top of the high mountain. Some people would say that it's personified there. Wisdom is crying out. Wisdom is standing on the high hill and whatever. And as you read through that, surely Christ embodied that or lived that. So that might be the closest. In verse 22 through 31, for example, the Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old, etc. So it is divine. It's the source of life. You can just read some of those there. Wisdom seems to be personified and seen in its perfection in chapter 8. It's personified. It's like wisdom is standing there crying in the streets. It's like a person. And so some have identified that with Jesus Christ. In some ways, that's probably true. Don't go too far with that, I don't think. Colossians says, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom. They would use that to support that Christ is in the Proverbs. And in 1 Corinthians 1:30, but of him you are in Christ, who became for us wisdom. And so you're going to have to sort that through in your mind, to what extent Christ is in the Proverbs. Is he really, when it talks about wisdom, is it really talking about Christ? In my opinion, Christ was the greatest example and perfection of wisdom, and he had all the aspects of wisdom in him. But when it's talking about wisdom here, I'm not sure that it's talking about Christ directly. He surely was a personification of it. What are the keys? Who can give me Proverbs 3, 5, and 6?
Trust in the Lord with all your heart.
Lean not on your own understanding. And he'll direct your path. Remember when we had poetry last week, you know, the synthetic and synonymous and antithetic and whatever. The one of them is, there's a statement and you keep adding on to it, synthetic. That's what that is. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. And lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. You got four things. You just kind of keep getting deeper and deeper and developing it more and more. So, what is the key? One of the keys, he's going to say, in your life is to trust the Lord with all your heart. And don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and let him direct your path. So, tomorrow you're going to have the opportunity, let's just assume that tomorrow, somewhere along the line, you're going to have the opportunity to lie. It's just going to make sense to lie, all right? Your boss, your neighbor, your spouse, whatever reason, it's just going to, I think lying here would be a good thing, all right? And you're going to have to sit there and go, now, do I trust in the Lord with all my heart, because he says don't lie, or do I lean on my own understanding? In all your ways, in this particular case, what do? I have to acknowledge him. Let's say, you're Lord, I'm not. You're the boss, I'm not. You're wise, I'm not. You're infinite, I'm not. I acknowledge you. I'm going to let you direct my path. I'm not going to lie. You're going to fill out your income tax someday soon, all right? Do I cheat? No one's going to know. You know, what do I, you know, trust in the Lord with all your heart. And all, you know, oh boy, I don't like that proverb. Do you? You know? What it says is, the key to it is, if you're not going to trust God, it's going to take trusting God. Because some days it's going to seem right to lie. Some days it's going to seem right to have friends who say, hey, let's go do this and get into bad things. You know, when you're 16, that sounds really smart sometimes. And some days your own understanding is going to lead you astray. So you're going to have to trust. That's the key all the way through it. Trust God. Trust God. And some days it's not going to make sense to your little mind. You got to trust him and let him be Lord and let him direct your path. I will do what you told me to do, even though it doesn't fit my understanding. Trust. Then Proverbs 3:7, which is the one that goes right after that, says, do not be wise in your own eyes, but fear the Lord and depart from evil. So that's the other side. Part of it is trust in the Lord, and the other is fear, which leads to departing from evil. So what song would say that? What song do we love to sing? One side is trust. The other side, trust and obey. That's a really good song, by the way. You know, it really does summarize so much of Scripture. Trust and obey. There's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. And the key is this. You're going to trust God with all your heart. You're going to fear Him and depart from evil. You're going to obey Him. Here's the statement. There can be no separation between righteousness and wisdom. Not this kind of wisdom. And like I said, we all know some people are very wise when it comes to restoring cars or handling money or even raising kids or a lot of other things, you know. But they're evil people. And if you're an evil person, you cannot be a fully wise person, biblically wise. You have skill in living. So you can't, you know, you can't do that. That's a scary thought in our world, because our world is trying to tell us again and again, well, that's his private life, you know. And you can't worry about his private life, because in his public life or her public life, you know, they're perfect, you know. In their private life, they're terrible liars and scum and whatever. But it's not that way. Truly wise people are righteous as well as doing the right things. So those go together. The four fools of Proverbs. You like them? Have you met them? You know which one you are. Well, Proverbs 1:4. Let's just pick them out. To give prudence to the... What's the next word? The simple. And you would find that the word simple or simpleton is found in a lot of the Proverbs. What does the word simple or simpleton mean? You know any simple people? Children. What would be the characteristic of a simpleton? A child, a two-year-old, three-year-old, whatever. They're naive. So you say, the other day I said to a little girl, Emily, look out the window, there's an elephant. She went, you know, she believed me. It's a snowstorm out there, you know. Oh, there's not an elephant out there. Well, if I tried that on you, probably you wouldn't even turn, right? I mean, you're way above that. But it's simple. They're just simple. They just don't know yet. They're unknowing. All right? As you go through the four fools, for example, here, they lack knowledge. The young man, knowledge. He lacks knowledge. Chapter 14, verse 15, it would say, he believes every... The simple believes every... All right? There's an elephant up there, and they look. And she must have looked for 3 minutes trying to find that elephant. And finally she turned around and said, there's no elephant there. It's like, when are you going to get it? I was just joking, you know. She's simple. She's little. She didn't get it. She believed me. I felt bad then, you know. If I could get you to turn, then it's a joke, you know. But when you have a 4 or 5-year-old, I felt bad that I had misled her. She really felt bad about it. Chapter 9, verse 4, the simple need to learn. So the first kind of fool is the simple. He just doesn't know. And part of the purpose of the Proverbs is to give prudence to the simple, to young men or knowledge and discretion. In other words, we all start there. And probably in some areas of your life, you're still there. There are some areas of your life that you're a simpleton. For example, if it came to designing a nuclear power plant, where would you be? I'd be real simple, you know. I'm at the bottom. I don't know anything, all right? I am not wise in that area. When it comes to a lot of things, I'm not wise, even in things that are more important than designing a nuclear power plant. So simpleton. And you'd find that in the Proverbs, it's trying to teach them. Give them knowledge so they can understand it, so they can use it. And all the way through Proverbs, when it talks about the simpleton, there's hope, a lot of hope. That's why it's written. My son, you know. You can almost hear the dad looking at his 3-year-old or 4-year-old or 5-year-old or 7-year-old or whatever. My son, that's not how you treat a car. My son, that's not how you know, whatever. And so there's hope, a lot of hope. They're just unknowing. They don't know things. Now in chapter 1, verse 22, we bump into the second fool. And it goes like this. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? In other words, there's a point when you should be moving out of that stage, all right? You're simple. But eventually you're supposed to know something. You're 12 years old now. You should know better than that. You ever say that to your kids? You know, it's like, you're smart. You should be smart enough now to do this. But notice it goes on. For scorners delight in scorning, and fools hate knowledge. In other words, this kind of scorner here, or this kind of fool, I should say, is the second kind. He's the one who hates knowledge. So you have the little kid, the naive, and some of us are still there in some areas of life, who don't know anything, so teach them. teach him. All right? And then you have the guy who is unteachable. Chapter 1, verse 28, he won't listen. Chapter 12, verse 23, he proclaims his folly. He thinks he knows it all. Chapter 17, in verse 25, he grieves his parents. Chapter 26, verse 12, he's wise in his own eyes. So it's okay to be a simpleton because there's hope for you. But then you become this self-confident one, the know-it-all, the unteachable. You don't have to teach me. I already know. And some of you have taught in different avenues, and there's always this kid in class who knows everything, you know. Whatever you think you're talking about, he already knows it. He thinks he knows it all. And therefore, he doesn't have to listen to you because he knows it all. And as you read through the Proverbs, that's the second kind of fool, the self-confident, unteachable. He won't listen. He's a grief to his parents. He's wise in his own eyes. He's even telling everybody, you know, and he's proclaiming his own folly. And wise people know he's talking folly. And so that's the second kind. As you read through that, there's basically no hope given for him. There's a little bit of hope, just a couple verses. If we developed all the passage on the self-confidence, there's just a couple that say there's hope. And the hope that will come to him is when he sees somebody else disciplined, then he might go, whoa, maybe I ought to listen here, okay? So you can see we're making progress. Simple, okay, let's get out of that, let's learn. Self-confident, oh, it's really tough to work with the self-confident. The next kind, which is also found in verse 22, is the scorner or the scoffer. They delight in their scorning. It's one thing to not know the truth. It's another thing to not be teachable in the truth. But now the scoffer is uncorrectable. He's a scorner. What does that word mean? You ever meet a scorner, a scoffer? It's another level between I know it all. He now not only thinks, I know it all, you don't need to teach me. He does what when you try to teach him? Reprove not a scoffer, he will only hate you. What's a scoffer? Yeah. So you say, Johnny, you shouldn't do that. He's not like, well, I already know, Dad, that you know you're not smart enough, I know it. He mocks you. He scoffs at you. So it's another level beyond I'm unteachable. It's uncorrectable. He mocks you. He scorns at you. And so he scorns instruction. You can sense the it's worse than being a simpleton. It's surely worse than being self-confident. Chapter 9, verse 7 and 8. Reprove not a scoffer, he'll only hate you. He hates correction. By the way, that's a very important proverb. And sometimes it's hard to know if I'm looking at a scoffer or a simpleton or self-confident. But once you figured out you're looking at a scoffer, then you have to know, reprove not a scoffer, he's only going to hate you. And we might disagree on this a little bit, but there are times I walk away from people and know there's no use talking to them. It really isn't. And that's what the proverb seems to tell me. And the other one in Proverbs 26, verse 4, you know, don't give an answer to the scoffer. He'll only hate you. You got to figure that out. Chapter 14 and verse 9 says, the scoffer mocks sin. So he's not only, I don't think you know what you're talking about, he really mocks you and scorns you if you try to correct him. Our world is becoming more and more that towards us Christians, I think. It used to be, it's like, okay, you guys and your bunch of rules and whatever, you know. But now they're openly mocking us. We're fools to them. They're scoffing us. They're scorning us. They ridicule us. They refuse to listen to us, even to think that we have any intelligence coming up with what we are. So what's the last one? In Proverbs 1, verse 7, it says, fools despise wisdom and instruction. There is a last kind of fool, word that's used, and it is translated fool, and he's the solidified. If you read all the verses about this one, he's like a blockhead. He's like a numbskull. He's like the worst of the worst. He's not only unknowing, unteachable, uncorrectable, he's ungodly. He despises wisdom and knowledge. He mocks at sin, and there's just a sense in which You pick up this, that the Proverbs are written primarily the simple. Oh, my son, I know you're only 5. Here's what I'm going to teach you. You're 16 or you're whatever it is. You're simple. You don't know what you're doing, so I'm going to try to teach you. But beware of becoming self-confident. And beware of becoming a scoffer. and then beware of, because if you don't, if you're going to end up as a solidified, and there's no hope given for the solidified in the Proverbs. Now, we know the grace of God can do anything, but as far as the Proverbs are concerned, there's no hope given for either the scoffer or the solidified. These four characters warn of the tendency to an increasingly settled way of life. And it should scare us. I am simple, but then I can think I know it all. And then I think I know it so well that you disagree with me. You're an idiot. And after a while, I'm so hardened in my way, my settled way of thinking, my settled way of life, that I'm just ungodly, and I'm not. You can't budge me. You can't even make me feel bad. You can't even make me shift or change or whatever. And so we have to watch out for that. As you think about that in your own life, you realize in some areas we're very wise. I hope all of you are wise in some areas of your life, but probably in some areas you're simple. You haven't got it there yet. You maybe haven't bumped into it yet. But hopefully you don't become self-confident. It's really hard to teach the unteachable. Do you notice that? And it's hard to give them wisdom. And the older I get, the more I think, boy, I've said this a lot, I wish I could just sit down with that family and just tell them how stupid they are and what they're doing, you know. Or just sit down with that boy and say, why do you do that to your dad? You know, you're a fool, you know. But eventually you become solidified. You're not teachable. So always have a teachable spirit. If there's anything you learn from Proverbs, it's, you know, you don't have it together yet. You have something together, but you got a lot to go. So always have a teachable spirit. Any comments on that? Did you ever study the Four Fools? Four Stooges, the Three Stooges, whatever, something like that. All right. There is a progression there. I got all the notes on it. I've preached that before. It's a very humbling thing. You might ask yourself, in what areas am I wise? What areas am I simple? What areas am I becoming self-confident or whatever? It's a scary place to be. Okay? No comments? All right, let's go to the benefits. Nuggets of truth that give secrets to holy living. And I just picked some. Like I said, when you try to study Proverbs, if you go verse by verse, you're going to come to a verse on anger, and a verse on training kids, and it might be right after it. You know, it's like, I guess you get angry when you raise your kids or something. I don't know. You know, there's not a flow like Romans or something. Then it'll be about riches and handling your money. Then it'll be about, you know, conflict. Then it'll be about, you know, your tongue. Then about your heart. And it's like click, 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 you know. So, and each of them is a great truth. So when you preach it, you'd go, all right, point number one, guard your heart. Point number two, handle your riches well. You know, the next week you get to the next chapter and it's like, point number one, guard your heart. Point number two, handle your riches right. So, generally speaking, most people, when they try to teach it, don't do it verse by verse. Now, you got to go topic. You got to say, okay, I'm going to pull out all the verses in Proverbs that deal with the simpleton. Write them on your piece of paper. What do I learn about simpletons? All right. All the verses that talk about the tongue. What does it teach me? What do the Proverbs teach me about my tongue or my speech? Or riches, or raising kids, or whatever. So I've done that. Now, before we go into this, because those will be the topics, some of the topics, and you can get charts of it if you want some. I got all kinds of different books. We'll break it down for you, all the verses on anger, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And most people have done it that way. That makes you say, why was it written this way? If we're going to preach it topically, why didn't he write it? Chapter 1 is all about anger. And everything you need to know about anger is in chapter 1. And chapter 2 is on conflict. Everything you need to know about conflict is in chapter 2. Chapter 3 is on raising kids. Everything you need to know about raising kids in chapter 3. Chapter 4 is on the tongue. You know, on and on. Why didn't he write it that way? Make it a lot easier to preach. Can you think of any good reasons? Because obviously, he didn't make a mistake. Yeah. About three verses in on the tongue, I got that one. I know where you're going. All right? All right. Yeah, okay. That's good. What else? That's great. So why have verses on the tongue scattered almost randomly, it seems like? It's like a shotgun. All over. Anger, you know. adulteresses all over. Why that? Yep. There you go. I think you're right on. If you're going to read it, it's written perfectly. Because you're going to have a little thought on anger, a little thought on the tongue, a little thought on, you know, whatever. Today, for reading is great. Because you're probably not going to read all 30 chapters of Proverbs in one sitting. You're probably going to read a little bit and you learn. And probably tomorrow you need to learn a little bit more about anger and tongue and, you know, whatever. And the next day you perhaps have to learn a little bit more about anger. And they are different. There's a lot of similarities, and some of them are repeated, but they're all different. You know, oh, there's another truth about tongue. I didn't know that, and whatever. So I think it's written well. It's just hard to preach that way. So what I did and what many people have done is gone topically. Mike? I don't think so. I didn't see any flow. If you can find some, I'd really be interested to see that, but I don't think so. Now, there are sections like Lemuel's thing on the woman and, you know, whatever. That's a whole chunk on wives and women and whatever. But Proverbs of Solomon, especially the center check section, is just, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he's not depart from him. And the multitude of counselors' wisdom. Da-da-da-da, you know, it's like, man, you just shot me with 14 truths. All right? But that's also the purpose, I think, is like, it's not trying to be exhaustive on raising kids or whatever. It's trying to give you a nugget of truth on raising kids, a nugget of truth on tongue. And you're supposed to think about that. And a little bit later, I'll give you another nugget of truth on raising kids, another nugget of truth on whatever. And you can think about that. It's a contemplative thing. So, but I don't think it's progressive that I've ever seen. Okay. Any other thoughts? So let's look at some nuggets of truth that give secrets to holy living. The first one is anger. There's a whole bunch of it. If you ever want to, I did preach this about 4 or 5 years ago in our church, and if you ever want to, all the list of them, you just get out your concordance and go all the verses of anger, and then just kind of look at them and go, what do I learn here? You know, you know, and you try to pick out general truths and make a nice outline and all that. Here's just two of them, probably the main two that I think of. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He that rules his spirit than he that takes a city. So that's synonymous. The second repeats the first one, okay? Chapter 18, verse 24. It is honorable for a man to stop quarreling since, I love this one, any fool can start a fight. Right? My dad used to tell me that one quite a bit. You know, you think you're really a man because you stood up and fought, and you're like, any fool can start a fight. I mean, it really knocks the wind out of your sail. I was like, I thought I was cool. And it talks a lot about anger. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. That's incredible. And so if you can learn to control your anger, as far as God is concerned, you're far better than George Patton, who took Europe. Right? You have been able to control yourself. You conquered yourself. That's incredible. My dad used to say, these are some of my dad's things, Rich, you can't shoot them. You know, you got to learn to live with them because the law says you can't shoot them. So whenever you get mad at people, you go, now, Rich, you can't. You got to learn to live with them because the law says you can't shoot them. Control your anger. One of the great things, I never saw my dad lose his temper, ever, even once. That was a great example for me because I had a real problem with anger when I was a kid. My dad had to really work with me on that one. I had a temper that was really big. My dad had to deal with that one. How about the next one? Where there is no counsel, the people perish. In the multitude of counselors, there is wisdom. So that's on counsel. Two heads are better than one. So you got to make a decision on buying a car. Just go alone and do it. Don't ask anybody, you know. Don't read magazines. Don't ask your wife to come along. Don't ask your dad. Don't just go do it, you know. You're smart enough. Handle it. Oh, I don't know. Maybe bringing your wife along is pretty good. She might help you. Okay, two heads are better than one. Without counsel, the people perish. Chapter 18, verse 24. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. So that's all about friends. There's a whole section on friends. And that's probably the key one. You catch more flies with honey. That's what my dad used to say. You know, if you want to be a rough, tough, hit people around kind of guy, you probably won't have many friends. You want friends? You got to be friendly. So what I've done is, in that study, I took all the verses and said, these are the characteristics of a friend. A friend sticks closer than a brother. A friend, okay? And they're easy to do. You just look at them and say, this is what a friend does. He sticks closer than a brother. A love covers a, you know, a friend rebukes. He doesn't let you continue it on a wrong way. He'll correct you, okay? Then you ask yourself, is that what I do to people? Do I stick closer than a brother? Do I abandon them in the time of their need? You know, do I confront people when they need rebuke, whatever? And then I can see why I have friends or don't have friends. Am I friendly? Do I have the characteristic? Some people think friendly means, oh, you're really cool and I like you. You know, I mean, just this friendly spirit about you. That's true, but it's more to friendship than that. A friend is all these other characteristics. So you want friends, you gotta be friendly. Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. A man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble. And so that's pride. My dad used to have a little song, you know, about the guy who held his own hand. You know, you're so proud, you know, no one's good enough for you, and you held your own hand. It goes before destruction. Of course, raising kids, train up a child, chasing your son while there's hope. Apples don't fall far from the tree, you know. The way you train them, you know, your kids are picking up things. Even if you're not consciously training them, you are training them. You're training them in how they react when injustice happens. They watch you, and eventually that's how they do it. They watch you when you get a chance to cheat or lie, and whether you're honest and whether you're frugal with your money or you're just a spendthrift or whatever. You're training them all the time. And pretty soon your kids are like you. And if you don't like your kids, maybe you ought to look in the mirror sometimes. You know, I mean, it's really a scary thought when you think about it. Chapter 10:22, it's a blessing of the Lord that makes a man rich. That, of course, is my life verse, the riches. You want to be rich? That's the most important thing to realize. It's not money. It's not houses and land and whatever. And most people in our world, if you said, who's the richest man in America? It would always be related to what? Money, right? The richest man in America is worth so many billion dollars, right? They would never say, the richest man in America is this poor little guy in the middle of Kentucky who sits in his little house, but he loves the Lord and the Lord loves him. You know? No one would ever come to that conclusion. It's the blessing of the Lord that makes a man rich. You want that in your life. Wealth is worthless in a day of wrath. So my dad's little statement, pigs won't even eat it. Speech, he who strains his lips is wise. Even a fool is considered wise when he holds his peace before opening mouth and gains your brain. Work, he who deals with a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes one rich. Do not overwork to be rich. So there's this balance in Proverbs. You know, on one side, he's talking about the sluggard, the guy with a slack hand. He becomes poor. The diligent makes one rich. So you say, okay, I'm going to work. He's, oh, don't overwork to be rich. So wisdom says, I'm going to work hard, but I'm not going to overwork. Right? And you have seen people go both directions on that one and ruin their lives. And so there's that paradox again in Proverbs. There are a lot of those paradoxes, which really are balancing points. And my dad used to say, now, Rich, you can't take it with you. You know, wealth for this world is great. You better work hard so you have things. Have food, whatever. God wants you to work. There's a lot on diligence, but don't be a fool and overwork. Proverbs is the most intensely practical book in the Old Testament because it teaches skillful living in the multiple aspects of everyday life. That's in the Open Bible, just a quote. You can agree with that or disagree with that, but that is a quote. Any comments on Proverbs? Hopefully you love it. And especially if you can just someday just take all the verses on anger or whatever is the topic, tongue, riches, diligence, work, whatever. Just write them down and just sit there and read them again and again and again and let them flow through your life and you go, I think I got it. I want to have friends. I got to be friendly. You know what friends do? They stick closer than a brother. On and on it goes. So you can help yourself with that. Any comments? You're going to take 5 minutes or a little more. Get a drink, and we'll be back. We'll do Song of Songs and Ecclesiastes and be done.